I liked Two-Bit's mother. She had the same good humor and easygoing ways that he did. She wasn't lazy like him, but she let him get away with murder. I don't know, though. It's just about impossible to get mad at him. When we had finished, I pulled on Dally's brown leather jacket. The back was burned black, and we started for 10th Street.
"I would drive us,"
Two-Bit said as we walked up the street trying to thumb a ride.
"But the brakes are out on my car. Almost killed me and Kathy the other night."
He flipped the collar of his black leather jacket up to serve as a windbreak while he lit a cigarette.
"You ought to see Kathy's brother. Now there's a hood. He's so greasy he glides when he walks. He goes to the barber for an oil change, not a haircut."
I would have laughed, but I had a terrific headache. We stopped at the Tasty Freeze to buy Cokes and rest up, and the blue Mustang that had been trailing us for 8 blocks pulled in. I almost decided to run, and Two-Bit must have guessed this, for he shook his head ever so slightly and tossed me a cigarette. As I lit up, the socias who had jumped Johnny and me at the park hopped out of the Mustang. I recognized Randy Anderson, Marsha's boyfriend, and the tall guy that had almost drowned me. I hated them. It was their fault Bob was dead, their fault Johnny was dying, their fault Soda and I might get put in a boys' home. I hated them as bitterly and as contemptuously as Dally Winston hated. Two-Bit put an elbow on my shoulder and leaned against me, dragging on his cigarette.
"You know the rules. No jazz before the rumble," he said to the socias.
"We know,"
Randy said. He looked at me.
"Come here. I want to talk to you."
I glanced at Two-Bit. He shrugged. I followed Randy over to his car, out of earshot of the rest. We sat there in his car for a second, silent.
Golly, that was the toughest car I've ever been in. "I read about you in the paper," Randy said finally. "How come?"
"I don't know. Maybe I felt like playing hero."
"I wouldn't have. I would have let those kids burn to death."
"You might not have. You might have done the same thing." Randy pulled out a cigarette and pressed in the car lighter.
"I don't know. I don't know anything anymore. I would never have believed a greaser could pull something like that."
"Greaser didn't have anything to do with it. My buddy over there wouldn't have done it. Maybe you would have done the same thing. Maybe a friend of yours wouldn't have. It's the individual."
"I'm not going to show at the Rumble tonight," Randy said slowly.
I took a good look at him. He was 17 or so, but he was already old, like Dallas was old. Cherry had said her friends were too cool to feel anything, and yet she could remember watching sunsets. Randy was supposed to be too cool to feel anything, and yet there was pain in his eyes.
"I'm sick of all this. Sick and tired. Bob was a good guy. He was the best buddy a guy ever had. I mean, he was a good fighter and tough and everything, but he was a real person, too. You dig?"
I nodded.
"He's dead. His mother has had a nervous breakdown. They spoiled him rotten. I mean, most parents would be proud of a kid like that, good-looking and smart and everything. But they gave in to him all the time. He kept trying to make someone say no, and they never did. They never did. That was what he wanted, for someone to tell him no, to have somebody lay down the law, set the limits, give him something solid to stand on. That's all we want, really. One time," Randy tried to grin, but I could tell he was close to tears. "One time he came home, drunker than anything. He thought sure they were going to raise the roof. You know what they did? They thought it was something they'd done. They thought it was their fault that they'd failed him and driven him to it or something. They took all the blame and didn't do anything to him. If his old man had just belted him, just once, he might still be alive. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I couldn't tell anyone else. my friends. They'd think I was off my rocker or turning soft. Maybe I am. I just know that I'm sick of this whole mess. That kid, your buddy, the one that got burned, he might die? Yeah, I said, trying not to think about Johnny. And tonight, people get hurt in rumbles, maybe killed. I'm sick of it, because it doesn't do any good. You can't win. You know that, don't you? And when I remained silent, he went on. You can't win, even if you whip us. You'll still be where you were before, at the bottom. And we'll still be the lucky ones with all the breaks. So it doesn't do any good, the fighting and the killing. It doesn't prove a thing. We'll forget it if you win or if you don't. Greasers will still be greasers, and socias will still be socias. Sometimes I think it's the ones in the middle that are really the lucky ones. He took a deep breath. So I'd fight if I thought it'd do any good. I think I'm gonna leave town. Take my little old Mustang and all the dough I can carry and get out.
Running away won't help.
Oh, hell, I know it. Randy half sobbed. But what can I do? I'm marked chicken if I punk out at the Rumble, and I'd hate myself if I didn't. I don't know what to do.
I'd help you if I could, I said. I remembered Cherry's voice. Things are rough all over.
I knew then what she meant. He looked at me. No, you wouldn't. I'm a soch. You get a little money and the whole world hates you.
No, I said. You hate the whole world.
He just looked at me. From the way he looked, he could have been 10 years older than he was. I got out of the car.
You would have saved those kids if you had been there, I said. You'd have saved them the same as we did.
Thanks, Grease, he said, trying to grin. Then he stopped. I didn't mean that. I meant thanks, kid.
My name's Pony Boy, I said. Nice talking to you, Randy.
I walked over to Two-Bit, and Randy honked for his friends to come and get into the car.
What did he want? Two-Bit asked. What did Mr. Super Soch have to say?
He ain't a soch, I said. He's just a guy. He just wanted to talk.
You want to see a movie before we go see Johnny in Dallas?
Nope, I said, lighting up another weed. I still had a headache, but I felt better. Socias were just guys, after all. Things were rough all over, but it was better that way. That way you could tell the other guy was human, too.
Chapter 8. The nurses wouldn't let us see Johnny. He was in critical condition, no visitors. But Two-Bit wouldn't take no for an answer. That was his buddy in there, and he aimed to see him. We both begged and pleaded, but we were getting nowhere until the doctor found out what was going on.
Let them go in, he said to the nurse. He's been asking for them. It can't hurt now.
Two-Bit didn't notice the expression in his voice.
It's true, I thought numbly. He is dying.
We went in, practically on tiptoe, because the quietness of the hospital scared us. Johnny was lying still, with his eyes closed, but when Two-Bit said, "Hey, Johnny kid," he opened them and looked at us, trying to grin.
"Hey, y'all."
The nurse, who was pulling the shades open, smiled and said,
"So, he can talk after all."
Two-Bit looked around.
"They treating you okay, kid?"
"Don't," Johnny gasped. "Don't let me put enough grease on my hair."
"Don't talk," Two-Bit said, pulling up a chair.
"Just listen. We'll bring you some hair grease next time. We're having the big Rumble tonight."
Johnny's huge black eyes widened a little, but he didn't say anything.
"It's too bad you and Dally can't be in it. It's the first big Rumble we've had.
not counting the time we whipped Shepard's outfit.
He came by, Johnny said.
Tim Shepard?
Johnny nodded. Came to see Dally. Tim and Dallas had always been buddies.
Did you know you got your name in the paper for being a hero?
Johnny almost grinned as he nodded. Tough enough, he managed, and by the way his eyes were glowing, I figured Southern gentlemen had nothing on Johnny Cade. I could see that even a few words were tiring him out. He was as pale as the pillow and looked awful. Two-Bit pretended not to notice.
You want anything besides hair grease, kid?
Johnny barely nodded. The book. He looked at me. Can you get another one? Two-Bit looked at me, too. I hadn't told him about Gone with the Wind.
He wants a copy of Gone with the Wind so I can read it to him, I explained.
You want to run down to the drugstore and get one?
Okay,
Two-Bit said cheerfully.
Don't y'all run off.
I sat down in Two-Bit's chair and tried to think of something to say.
Dally's gonna be okay, I said finally. And Darry and me, we're okay now.
I knew Johnny understood what I meant. We had always been close buddies, and those lonely days in the church strengthened our friendship. He tried to smile again, and then suddenly went white and closed his eyes tight.
Johnny, I said, alarmed, are you okay?
He nodded, keeping his eyes closed.
Yeah, it just hurts sometimes. It usually don't. I can't feel anything below the middle of my back.
He lay breathing heavily for a moment.
I'm pretty bad off, ain't I, Pony?
You'll be okay, I said with fake cheerfulness. You gotta be. We couldn't get along without you.
The truth of that last statement hit me. We couldn't get along without him. We needed Johnny as much as he needed the gang, and for the same reason.
I won't be able to walk again, Johnny started, then faltered. Not even on crutches. Busted my back.
You'll be okay, I repeated firmly.
Don't start crying, I commanded myself. Don't start crying, you'll scare Johnny.
You want to know something, Pony Boy? I'm scared stiff. I used to talk about killing myself.
He drew a quivering breath.
I don't want to die now. It ain't long enough. 16 years ain't long enough. I wouldn't mind it so much if there wasn't so much stuff I ain't done yet, and so many things I ain't seen. It's not fair. You know what? That time we were in Windricksville was the only time I've been away from our neighborhood.
You ain't gonna die, I said, trying to hold my voice down. And don't get juiced up, because the doc won't let us see you no more if you do.
16 years on the streets and you can learn a lot. But all the wrong things, not the things you want to learn. 16 years on the streets and you see a lot. But all the wrong sights, not the sights you want to see.
Johnny closed his eyes and rested quietly for a minute. Years of living on the East Side teaches you how to shut off your emotions. If you didn't, you would explode. You learn to cool it.
A nurse appeared in the doorway.
Johnny, she said quietly, your mother's here to see you.
Johnny opened his eyes. At first they were wide with surprise, then they darkened.
I don't want to see her, he said firmly.
She's your mother.
I said I don't want to see her.
His voice was rising. She's probably come to tell me about all the trouble I'm causing her, and how glad her and the old man'll be when I'm dead.
Well, tell her to leave me alone for once.
His voice broke.
For once, just to leave me alone.
He was struggling to sit up, but he suddenly gasped, went whiter than the pillowcase, and passed out cold.
The nurse hurried me out the door. I was afraid of something like this if he saw anyone. I ran into Two-Bit, who was coming in.
You can't see him now, the nurse said, so Two-Bit handed her the book. Make sure he can see it when he comes around.
She took it and closed the door behind her. Two-Bit stood and looked at the door a long time.
I wish it was any one of us except Johnny, he said, and his voice was serious for once. We could get along without anyone but Johnny.
Turning abruptly, he said,
Let's go see Dallas.
As we walked out into the hall, we saw Johnny's mother. I knew her. She was a little woman with straight black hair and big black eyes like Johnny's, but that was as far as the resemblance went. Johnny Cake's eyes were fearful and sensitive. Hers were cheap and hard. As we passed her, she was saying,
But I have a right to see him. He's my son. After all the trouble his father and I have gone to raise him, this is our reward. He'd rather see those no-count hoodlums than his own folks.
She saw us and gave us such a look of hatred that I almost backed up.
It was your fault. Always running around in the middle of the night, getting jailed and heaven knows what else.
I thought she was going to cuss us out. I really did. Two-Bit's eyes got narrow, and I was afraid he was going to start something. I don't like to hear women get sworn at, even if they deserve it.
No wonder he hates your guts,
Two-Bit snapped. He was going to tell her off real good, but I shoved him along. I felt sick. No wonder Johnny didn't want to see her. No wonder he stayed overnight at Two-Bit's or at our house and slept in the vacant lot in good weather. I remembered my mother, beautiful and golden like soda, and wise and firm like dairy.
Oh, Lordy.
There was a catch in Two-Bit's voice, and he was closer to tears than I'd ever seen him.
He has to live with that.
We hurried to the elevator to get to the next floor. I hoped the nurse would have enough sense not to let Johnny's mother see him. It would kill him. Dally was arguing with one of the nurses when we came in. He grinned at us.
Man, am I glad to see you. These hospital people won't let me smoke, and I want out.
We sat down, grinning at each other. Dally was his usual mean, ornery self. He was okay.
Shepherd came by to see me a while ago.
That's what Johnny said. What did he want?
Said he saw my picture in the paper and couldn't believe it didn't have wanted, dead or alive, under it. He mostly came to rub it in about the rumble. Man, I hate not being in that.
Only last week, Tim Shepherd had cracked three of Dally's ribs. But Dally and Tim Shepherd had always been buddies. No matter how they fought, they were two of a kind, and they knew it. Dally was grinning at me.
Kid, you scared the devil out of me the other day. I thought I'd killed you.
Me? I said, puzzled. Why?
When you jumped out of the church, I meant to hit you just hard enough to knock you down and put out the fire. But when you dropped like a ton of lead, I thought I'd aim too high and broke your neck.
He thought for a minute.
I'm glad I didn't, though.
I'll bet, I said with a grin. I'd never liked Dally, but then, for the first time, I felt like he was my buddy, and all because he was glad he hadn't killed me. Dally looked out the window. He sounded very casual.
How's the kid?
We just left him,
Two-Bit said, and I could tell that he was debating whether to tell Dally the truth or not.
I don't know about stuff like this, but, well, he seemed pretty bad to me. He passed out cold before we left him.
Dally's jawline went white as he swore between clenched teeth.
Two-Bit, you still got that fancy black-handled switch?
Yeah.
Give it here.
Two-Bit reached into his back pocket for his prized possession. It was a jet-handled switchblade, 10 inches long, that would flash open at a mere breath. It was the reward of 2 hours of walking aimlessly around a hardware store to divert suspicion. He kept it razor sharp. As far as I knew, he had never pulled it on anyone. He used his plain pocket knife when he needed a blade, but it was his showpiece, his pride and joy. Every time he ran into a new hood, he pulled it out and showed off with it.
Dally knew how much that knife meant to Two-Bit, and if he needed a blade bad enough to ask for it, well, he needed a blade. That was all there was to it. Two-Bit handed it over to Dally without a moment's hesitation.
"We gotta win that fight tonight," Dally said.
His voice was hard. "We gotta get even with Associus. For Johnny." He put the switch under his pillow and lay back, staring at the ceiling. We left. We knew better than to talk to Dally when his eyes were blazing and he was in a mood like that. We decided to catch a bus home. I just didn't feel much like walking or trying to hitch a ride. Two-Bit left me sitting on the bench at the bus stop while he went to a gas station to buy some cigarettes. I was kind of sick to my stomach and sort of groggy. I was nearly asleep when I felt someone's hand on my forehead. I almost jumped out of my skin. Two-Bit was looking down at me worriedly.
"You feel okay? You're awful hot."
"I'm all right," I said, and when he looked at me as if he didn't believe me, I got a little panicky. "Don't tell Dary, okay? Come on, Two-Bit, be a buddy. I'll be well by tonight. I'll take a bunch of aspirins."
"All right," Two-Bit said reluctantly. "But Dary'll kill me if you're really sick and go ahead and fight anyway."
"I'm okay," I said, getting a little angry. "And if you keep your mouth shut, Dary won't know a thing."
"You know something?" Two-Bit said as we were riding home on the bus. "You'd think you could get away with murder living with your big brother and all, but Dary's stricter with you than your folks were, ain't he?"
"Yeah," I said, "but they'd raised two boys before me. Dary hasn't."
"You know, the only thing that keeps Dary from being a soch is us."
"I know," I said. I had known it for a long time. In spite of not having much money, the only reason Dary couldn't be a soch was us, the gang, me and Soda. Dary was too smart to be a greaser. I don't know how I knew, I just did. And I was kind of sorry. I was silent most of the way home. I was thinking about the rumble. I had a sick feeling in my stomach, and it wasn't from being ill. It was the same kind of helplessness I'd felt that night Dary yelled at me for going to sleep in the lot. I had the same deathly fear that something was going to happen that none of us could stop. As we got off the bus, I finally said it. "Tonight, I don't like it one bit." Two-Bit pretended not to understand.
"I never knew you to play chicken in a rumble before. Not even when you was a little kid."
I knew he was trying to make me mad, but I took the bait anyway.
"I ain't chicken, Two-Bit Matthews, and you know it," I said angrily. "Ain't I a Curtis, same as Soda and Dary?"
Two-Bit couldn't deny this, so I went on. "I mean, I got an awful feeling something's gonna happen."
"Something is gonna happen. We're gonna stomp the soch's guts, that's what."
Two-Bit knew what I meant, but doggedly pretended not to. He seemed to feel that if you said something was all right, it immediately was, no matter what. He's been that way all his life, and I don't expect he'll change. Soda Pop would have understood, and we would have tried to figure it out together, but Two-Bit just ain't Soda, not by a long shot. Cherry Valance was sitting in her Corvette by the vacant lot when we came by. Her long hair was pinned up, and in daylight she was even better looking. That Stingray was one tough car, a bright red one. It was cool.
"Hi, Pony Boy," she said.
"Hi, Two-Bit."
Two-Bit stopped.
Apparently, Cherry had shown up there before, during the week Johnny and I had spent in Windricksville.
"What's up with the big times?"
She tightened the strings on her ski jacket.
"They play your way. No weapons, fair deal, your rules."
"You sure?"
She nodded.
"Randy told me. He knows for sure."
Two-Bit turned and started home.
"Thanks, Cherry."
Pony Boy, stay a minute, Cherry said. I stopped and went back to her car.
Randy's not going to show up at the Rumble.
Yeah, I said. I know.
He's not scared. He's just sick of fighting. Bob, she swallowed, then went on quietly. Bob was his best buddy since grade school.
I thought of Soda and Steve. What if one of them saw the other killed? Would that make them stop fighting? No, I thought. Maybe it would make Soda stop, but not Steve. He'd go on hating and fighting. Maybe that was what Bob would have done if it had been Randy instead of him.
How's Johnny?
Not so good, I said.
Will you go up to see him?
She shook her head.
No, I couldn't.
Why not? I demanded. It was the least she could do. It was her boyfriend who had caused it all. And then I stopped. Her boyfriend.
I couldn't, she said in a quiet, desperate voice. He killed Bob. Oh, maybe Bob asked for it. I know he did. But I couldn't ever look at the person who killed him. You only knew his bad side. He could be sweet sometimes and friendly. But when he got drunk, it was that part of him that beat up Johnny. I knew it was Bob when you told me the story. He was so proud of his rings. Why do people sell liquor to boys? Why? I know there's a law against it, but kids get it anyway. I can't go see Johnny. I know I'm too young to be in love and all that, but Bob was something special. He wasn't just any boy. He had something that made people follow him. Something that marked him different, maybe a little better than the crowd. Do you know what I mean?
I did. Cherry saw the same things in Dallas. That was why she was afraid to see him, afraid of loving him. I knew what she meant, all right. But she also meant she wouldn't go see Johnny because he had killed Bob. That's okay, I said sharply. It wasn't Johnny's fault Bob was a booze hound and Cherry went for boys who were bound for trouble. I wouldn't want you to see him. You're a traitor to your own kind and not loyal to us. Do you think your spying for us makes up for the fact that you're sitting there in a Corvette while my brother drops out of school to get a job? Don't you ever feel sorry for us. Don't you ever try to give us handouts and then feel high and mighty about it. I started to turn and walk off, but something in Cherry's face made me stop. I was ashamed. I can't stand to see girls cry. She wasn't crying, but she was close to it.
I wasn't trying to give you charity, Pony Boy. I only wanted to help. I liked you from the start, the way you talked. You're a nice kid, Pony Boy. Do you realize how scarce nice kids are nowadays? Wouldn't you try to help me if you could?
I would. I'd help her and Randy both if I could. Hey, I said suddenly. Can you see the sunset real good from the west side? She blinked, startled, then smiled.
Real good.
You can see it good from the east side, too, I said quietly.
Thanks, Pony Boy.
She smiled through her tears.
You dig okay.
She had green eyes. I went on, walking home slowly. Chapter 9. It was almost 6:30 when I got home. The Rumble was set for 7, so I was late for supper, as usual. I always come in late. I forget what time it is. Darry had cooked dinner. Baked chicken and potatoes and corn. 2 chickens, because all 3 of us eat like horses, especially Darry. But although I loved baked chicken, I could hardly swallow any. I swallowed 5 aspirins, though, when Darry and Soda weren't looking. I do that all the time because I can't sleep very well at night. Darry thinks I take just 1, but I usually take 4. I figured 5 would keep me going through the Rumble and maybe get rid of my headache. Then I hurried to take a shower and change clothes. Me and Soda and Darry always got spruced up before a Rumble. And besides, we wanted to show those socias we weren't trash, that we were just as good as they were. Soda, I called from the bathroom, when did you start shaving? When I was 15, he yelled back. When did Derry? When he was 13. Why? You figuring on growing a beard for the Rumble?
You're funny. We ought to send you into the Reader's Digest. I heard they pay a lot for funny things.
Soda laughed and went right on playing poker with Steve in the living room. Derry had on a tight black T-shirt that showed every muscle on his chest, and even the flat, hard muscles of his stomach. I'd hate to be the soch who takes a crack at him, I thought, as I pulled on a clean T-shirt and a fresh pair of jeans. I wished my T-shirt was tighter. I have a pretty good build for my size, but I'd lost a lot of weight in Windricksville, and it just didn't fit right. It was a chilly night, and T-shirts aren't the warmest clothes in the world, but nobody ever gets cold in a Rumble, and besides, jackets interfere with your swinging ability. Soda and Steve and I had put on more hair oil than was necessary, but we wanted to show that we were greasers. Tonight, we could be proud of it. Greasers may not have much, but they have a rep. That and long hair. What kind of a world is it where all I have to be proud of is a reputation for being a hood and greasy hair? I don't want to be a hood, but even if I don't steal things and mug people and get boozed up, I'm marked lousy. Why should I be proud of it? Why should I even pretend to be proud of it? Derry never went in for long hair. His was short and clean all the time. I sat in the armchair in the living room, waiting for the rest of the outfit to show up. But, of course, tonight the only one coming would be Two-Bit. Johnny and Dallas wouldn't show. Soda and Steve were playing cards and arguing as usual. Soda was keeping up a steady stream of wisecracks and clowning, and Steve had turned up the radio so loud that it almost broke my eardrums. Of course, everybody listens to it loud like that, but it wasn't just the best thing for a headache. "You like fights, don't you, Soda?" I asked suddenly.
"Yeah, sure," he shrugged. "I like fights."
"How come?"
"Well, I don't know,"
he looked at me, puzzled.
"It's action. It's a contest, like a drag race or a dance or something."
"Shoot," said Steve. "I want to beat those Socia's heads in. When I get into a fight, I want to stomp the other guy good. I like it, too."
"How come you like fights, Derry?" I asked, looking up at him as he stood behind me, leaning in the kitchen doorway. He gave me one of those looks that hide what he's thinking, but Soda piped up.
"He likes to show off his muscles." "I'm going to show 'em off on you, little buddy, if you get any mouthier."
I digested what Soda had said. It was the truth. Derry liked anything that took strength, like weightlifting or playing football or roofing houses, even if he was proud of being smart, too. Derry never said anything about it, but I knew he liked fights. "I'll fight anyone, anytime, but I don't like to."
"I don't know if you ought to be in this Rumble, Pony," Derry said slowly.
"Oh, no," I thought in mortal fear. "I've got to be in it." Right then, the most important thing in my life was helping us whip the Socias. "Don't let him make me stay home now. I've got to be in it."
"How come? I've always come through before, ain't I?"
"Yeah," Derry said with a proud grin. "You fight real good for a kid your size. But you were in shape before. You've lost weight, and you don't look so great, kid. You're tensed up too much."
"Shoot,"
said Soda, trying to get the ace out of his shoe without Steve seeing him. "We all get tensed up before a Rumble. Let him fight tonight. Skin never hurt anyone. No weapons, no danger."
"I'll be okay," I pleaded. "I'll get hold of a little one, okay?"
"Well, Johnny won't be there this time.
Johnny and I sometimes ganged up on one big guy.
But then, Curly Shepherd won't be there either, or Dally, and we'll need every man we can get."
"What happened to Shepherd?" I asked, remembering Tim Shepherd's kid brother. Curly, who was a tough, cool, hard-as-nails Tim in miniature, and I, had once played chicken by holding our cigarette ends against each other's fingers. We had stood there, clenching our teeth and grimacing, with sweat pouring down our faces and the smell of burning flesh making us sick, each refusing to holler, until Tim happened to stroll by. When he saw that we were really burning holes in each other, he cracked our heads together, swearing to kill us both if we ever pulled a stunt like that again. I still have the scar on my forefinger. Curly was an average downtown hood, tough and not real bright, but I liked him. He could take anything.
"He's in the cooler," Steve said, kicking the ace out of Soda's shoe.
"In the reformatory." "Again?" I thought, and said, "Let me fight, Darry. If it was blades or chains or something, it'd be different. Nobody ever gets really hurt in a skin rumble."
"Well,"
Darry gave in,
"I guess you can. But be careful, and if you get in a jam, holler and I'll get you out."
"I'll be okay," I said wearily. "How come you never worry about Soda Pop as much? I don't see you lecturing him."
"Man,"
Darry grinned and put his arm across Soda's shoulders,
"this is one kid brother I don't have to worry about."
Soda punched him in the ribs affectionately.
"This kiddo can use his head."
Soda Pop looked down at me with mock superiority, but Darry went on.
"You can see he uses it for one thing, to grow hair on."
He ducked Soda's swing and took off for the door. Two-Bit stuck his head in the door just as Darry went flying out of it. Leaping as he went off the steps, Darry turned a somersault in midair, hit the ground, and bounced up before Soda could catch him.
"Welp,"
Two-Bit said cheerfully, cocking an eyebrow,
"I see we are in prime condition for a rumble. Is everybody happy?"
"Yeah!" screamed Soda, as he too did a flying somersault off the steps. He flipped up to walk on his hands, and then did a no-hands cartwheel across the yard to beat Darry's performance. The excitement was catching. Screeching like an Indian, Steve went running across the lawn in flying leaps, stopped suddenly, and flipped backwards. We could all do acrobatics, because Darry had taken a course at the Y, and then spent a whole summer teaching us everything he'd learned, on the grounds that it might come in handy in a fight. It did, but it also got Two-Bit and Soda jailed once. They were doing mid-air flips down a downtown sidewalk, walking on their hands, and otherwise disturbing the public and the police. Leave it to those two to pull something like that. With a happy whoop, I did a no-hands cartwheel off the porch steps, hit the ground, and rolled to my feet. Two-Bit followed me in a similar manner.
"I am a greaser,"
Soda Pop chanted. "I am a J.D. and a hood. I blacken the name of our fair city. I beat up people. I rob gas stations. I am a menace to society. Man, do I have fun."
"Greaser, greaser, greaser,"
Steve sing-songed. "Oh, victim of environment, underprivileged, rotten, no-count hood."
"Juvenile delinquent, you're no good," Darry shouted. "Get thee hence, white trash,"
Two-Bit said in a snobbish voice.
"I am a soche. I am the privileged and the well-dressed. I throw beer blasts, drive fancy cars, break windows at fancy parties."
"And what do you do for fun?" I inquired in a serious, awed voice.
"I jump greasers,"
Two-Bit screamed and did a cartwheel. We settled down as we walked to the lot. Two-Bit was the only one wearing a jacket. He had a couple of cans of beer stuffed in it. He always gets high before a rumble. Before anything else, too, come to think of it. I shook my head. I'd hate to see the day when I had to get my nerve from a can. I'd tried drinking once before. The stuff tasted awful. I got sick, had a headache, and when Darry found out, he grounded me for 2 weeks. But that was the last time I'd ever drink. I'd seen too much of what drinking did for you at Johnny's house. "Hey, Two-Bit," I said, deciding to complete my survey. "How come you like to fight?" He looked at me as if I was off my nut.
"Shoot, everybody fights."
If everybody jumped in the Arkansas River, old Two-Bit would be right on their heels. I had it then. Soda fought for fun, Steve for hatred, Darry for pride, and Two-Bit for conformity. Why do I fight? I thought, and couldn't think of any real good reason. There isn't any real good reason for fighting except self-defense.
Listen, Soda. You and Pony Boy, Darry said as we strode down the street, if the fuzz show, you two beat it out of there. The rest of us can only get jailed. You two can get sent to a boys' home.
Nobody in this neighborhood's gonna call the fuzz, Steve said grimly. They know what'd happen if they did.
All the same, you two blow at the first sign of trouble, you hear me?
You sure don't need an amplifier,
Soda said, and stuck out his tongue at the back of Darry's head. I stifled a giggle. If you want to see something funny, it's a tough hood sticking his tongue out at his big brother. Tim Shepard and company were already waiting when we arrived at the vacant lot, along with a gang from Brumley, one of the suburbs. Tim was a lean, cat-like 18-year-old who looked like the model J.D. you see in movies and magazines. He had the right curly black hair, smoldering dark eyes, and a long scar from temple to chin where a tramp had belted him with a broken pop bottle. He had a tough, hard look to him, and his nose had been broken twice. Like Dally's, his smile was grim and bitter. He was one of those who enjoy being a hood. The rest of his bunch were the same way. The boys from Brumley, too. Young hoods who would grow up to be old hoods. I'd never thought about it before, but they'd just get worse as they got older, not better. I looked at Darry. He wasn't going to be any hood when he got old. He was going to get somewhere. Living the way we do would only make him more determined to get somewhere. That's why he's better than the rest of us, I thought. He's going somewhere, and I was going to be like him. I wasn't going to live in a lousy neighborhood all my life. Tim had the tense, hungry look of an alley cat. That's what he always reminded me of, an alley cat. And he was constantly restless. His boys ranged from 15 to 19, hard-looking characters who were used to the strict discipline Tim gave out. That was the difference between his gang and ours. They had a leader and were organized. We were just buddies who stuck together. Each man was his own leader. Maybe that's why we could whip them. Tim and the leader of the Brumley outfit moved forward to shake hands with each of us, proving that our gangs were on the same side in this fight, although most of the guys in those two outfits weren't exactly what I'd like to call my friends. When Tim got to me, he studied me, maybe remembering how his kid brother and I had played chicken.
You and the quiet black-headed kid were the ones who killed that Soch?
Yeah, I said, pretending to be proud of it. Then I thought of Cherry and Randy and got a sick feeling in my stomach.
Good going, kid. Curly always said you were a good kid. Curly's in the reformatory for the next 6 months.
Tim grinned ruefully, probably thinking of his rough-neck, hard-headed brother.
He got caught breaking into a liquor store, the little...
He went on to call Curly every unprintable name under the sun. In Tim's way of thinking, terms of affection. I surveyed the scene with pride. I was the youngest one there. Even Curly, if he had been there, had turned 15, so he was older than me. I could tell Darry realized this too, and although he was proud, I also knew he was worried. Shoot, I thought, I'll fight so good this time he won't ever worry about me again. I'll show him that someone besides Soda Pop can use his head. One of the Brumley guys waved me over. We mostly stuck with our own outfits, so I was a little leery of going over to him, but I shrugged. He asked to borrow a weed, then lit up.
That big guy with y'all, you know him pretty well?
I ought to. He's my brother, I said. I couldn't honestly say yes. I knew Darry as well as he knew me, and that isn't saying a whole lot.
No kidding. I got a feeling he's going to be asked to start the fireworks around here. He a pretty good bopper?
He meant rumbler. Those Brumley boys have weird vocabularies. I doubt if half of them can read a newspaper or spell much more than their names, and it comes out in their speech. I mean, you take a guy that calls a rumble bop action, and you can tell he isn't real educated.
Yep, I said. But why him?
He shrugged.
Why anybody else?
I looked our outfits over. Most greasers don't have real tough builds or anything. They're mostly lean and kind of panther-looking in a slouchy way. This is partly because they don't eat much, and partly because they're slouchy. Darry looked like he could whip anyone there. I think most of the guys were nervous because of the no-weapons rule. I didn't know about the Brumley boys, but I knew Shepherd's gang were used to fighting with anything they could get their hands on. Bicycle chains, blades, pop bottles, pieces of pipe, pool sticks, or sometimes even heaters. I mean, guns. I have a kind of lousy vocabulary, too, even if I am educated. Our gang never went in for weapons. We're just not that rough. The only weapons we ever used were knives, and shoot, we carried them mostly just for looks. Like Two-Bit with his black-handled switch. None of us had ever really hurt anybody, or wanted to. Just Johnny. And he hadn't wanted to.
"Hey, Curtis!"
Tim yelled. I jumped.
"Which one?"
I heard Soda yell back.
"The big one. Come on over here."
The guy from Brumley looked at me.
"What did I tell you?"
I watched Darry going toward Tim and the leader of the Brumley boys. He shouldn't be here, I thought suddenly. I shouldn't be here, and Steve shouldn't be here, and Soda shouldn't be here, and Two-Bit shouldn't be here. We're greasers, but not hoods, and we don't belong with this bunch of future convicts. We could end up like them, I thought. We could. And the thought didn't help my headache. I went back to stand with Soda and Steve and Two-Bit then, because the Sochas were arriving. Right on time. They came in 4 carloads and filed out silently. I counted 22 of them. There were 20 of us, so I figured the odds were as even as we could get them. Darry always likes to take on 2 at a time anyway. They looked like they were all cut from the same piece of cloth. Clean-shaven with semi-beetle haircuts, wearing striped or checkered shirts with light red or tan-colored jackets or Madras ski jackets. They could just as easily have been going to the movies as to a rumble. That's why people don't ever think to blame the Sochas and are always ready to jump on us. We look hoody, and they look decent. It could be just the other way around. Half of the hoods I know are pretty decent guys underneath all that grease. And from what I've heard, a lot of Sochas are just cold-blooded mean. But people usually go by looks. They lined up silently, facing us, and we lined up facing them. I looked for Randy, but didn't see him. I hoped he wasn't there. A guy with a Madras shirt stepped up.
"Let's get the rules straight. Nothing but our fists, and the first to run, lose, right?"
Tim flipped away his beer can.
"You savvy real good."
There was an uneasy silence. Who was going to start it? Darry solved the problem. He stepped forward under the circle of light made by the street lamp. For a minute, everything looked unreal, like a scene out of a J.D. movie or something. Then Darry said,
"I'll take on anyone."
He stood there, tall, broad-shouldered, his muscles taut under his T-shirt, and his eyes glittering like ice. For a second, it looked like there wasn't anyone brave enough to take him on. Then there was a slight stir in the faceless mob of Sochas, and a husky blonde guy stepped forward. He looked at Darry and said quietly, "Hello, Darryl." Something flickered behind Darry's eyes, and then they were ice again.
"Hello, Paul."
I heard Soda give a kind of squeak, and I realized that the blonde was Paul Holden. He had been the best halfback on Darry's football team at high school, and he and Darry used to buddy it around all the time. He must be a junior in college by now, I thought. He was looking at Darry with an expression I couldn't quite place, but disliked. Contempt? Pity? Hate? All three? Why? Because Darry was standing there representing all of us, and maybe Paul felt only contempt and pity and hate for greasers? Darry hadn't moved a muscle or changed expression, but you could see he hated Paul now. It wasn't only jealousy. Darry had a right to be jealous. He was ashamed to be on our side, ashamed to be seen with the Brumley boys, Shepherd's gang, maybe even us. Nobody realized it but me and Soda. It didn't matter to anyone but me and Soda. That's stupid, I thought swiftly. They've both come here to fight, and they're both supposed to be smarter than that. What difference does the side make?
Then Paul said, I'll take you. And something like a smile crossed Derry's face.
I knew Derry had thought he could take Paul any time, but that was 2 or 3 years ago. What if Paul was better now?
I swallowed. Neither one of my brothers had ever been beaten in a fight, but I wasn't exactly itching for someone to break the record. They moved in a circle under the light, counterclockwise, eyeing each other, sizing each other up, maybe remembering old faults and wondering if they were still there. The rest of us waited with mounting tension. I was reminded of Jack London's books, you know, where the wolf pack waits in silence for one of two members to go down in a fight. But it was different here. The moment either one swung a punch, the rumble would be on. The silence grew heavier, and I could hear the harsh, heavy breathing of the boys around me. Still, Derry and the Soche walked slowly in a circle. Even I could feel their hatred. They used to be buddies, I thought. They used to be friends, and now they hate each other because one has to work for a living, and the other comes from the west side. They shouldn't hate each other. I don't hate the Soches anymore. They shouldn't hate...
Hold up!
A familiar voice yelled.
Hold it!
Derry turned to see who it was, and Paul swung, a hard right to the jaw that would have felled anyone but Derry. The rumble was on. Dallas Winston ran to join us. I couldn't find a Soche my size, so I took the next best size and jumped on him. Dallas was right beside me, already on top of someone.
I thought you were in the hospital,
I yelled as the Soche knocked me to the ground and I rolled to avoid getting kicked.
I was.
Dally was having a hard time because his left arm was still in bad shape.
I ain't now.
How? I managed to ask as the Soche I was fighting leaped on top of me and we rolled near Dally.
Talk the nurse into it with 2-bit switch. Don't you know a rumble ain't a rumble unless I'm in it?
I couldn't answer because the Soche, who was heavier than I took him for, had pinned me and was slugging the sense out of me. I thought dizzily that he was going to knock some of my teeth loose or break my nose or something, and I knew I didn't have a chance. But Derry was keeping an eye out for me. He caught that guy by the shoulder and half-lifted him up before knocking him 3 feet with a sledgehammer blow. I decided it would be fair for me to help Dally, since he could only use one arm. They were slugging it out, but Dallas was getting the worst of it, so I jumped on his Soche's back, pulling his hair and pounding him. He reached back and caught me by the neck and threw me over his head to the ground. Tim Shepherd, who was fighting two at once, accidentally stepped on me, knocking my breath out. I was up again as soon as I got my wind and jumped right back on the Soche, trying my best to strangle him. While he was prying my fingers loose, Dally knocked him backward so that all three of us rolled on the ground, gasping, cussing, and punching. Somebody kicked me hard in the ribs, and I yelped in spite of myself. Some Soche had knocked out one of our bunch and was kicking me as hard as he could, but I had both arms wrapped around the other Soche's neck and refused to let go. Dally was slugging him, and I hung on desperately, although that other Soche was kicking me, and you'd better believe it hurt. Finally, he kicked me in the head so hard it stunned me, and I lay limp, trying to clear my mind and keep from blacking out. I could hear the racket, but only dimly through the buzzing in my ears. Numerous bruises along my back and on my face were throbbing, but I felt detached from the pain, as if it wasn't really me feeling it.
"They're running!" I heard a voice yell joyfully. "Look at the dirty Soches run!"
It seemed to me that the voice belonged to 2-Bit, but I couldn't be sure. I tried to sit up and saw that the Soches were getting into their cars and leaving. Tim Shepherd was swearing blue and green because his nose was broken again, and the leader of the Brumley boys was working over one of his own men because he had broken the rules and used a piece of pipe in the fighting. Steve lay doubled up and groaning about 10 feet from me. We found out later he had 3 broken ribs. Soda Pop was beside him, talking in a low, steady voice. I did a double take when I saw 2-Bit. Blood was streaming down one side of his face, and one hand was busted wide open, but he was grinning happily because the Soches were running.
"We won," Derry announced in a tired voice.
He was going to have a black eye, and there was a cut across his forehead. We beat the Socs.
Dally stood beside me quietly for a minute, trying to grasp the fact that we had really beaten the Socs. Then, grabbing my shirt, he hauled me to my feet.
Come on!
He half-dragged me down the street.
We're going to see Johnny.
I tried to run, but stumbled, and Dally impatiently shoved me along.
Hurry! He was getting worse when I left. He wants to see you.
I don't know how Dallas could travel so fast and hard after being knocked around and having his sore arm hurt some more, but I tried to keep up with him. Track wasn't ever like the running I did that night. I was still dizzy and had only a dim realization of where I was going and why. Dally had Buck Merrill's T-Bird parked in front of our house, and we hopped into it. I sat tight as Dally roared the car down the street. We were on 10th when a siren came on behind us, and I saw the reflection of the red light flashing in the windshield.
"Look sick," Dally commanded. "I'll say I'm taking you to the hospital, which'll be truth enough."
I leaned against the cold glass of the window and tried to look sick, which wasn't too hard, feeling the way I did right then. The policeman looked disgusted.
"All right, buddy, where's the fire?" "The kid,"
Dally jerked a thumb toward me.
"He fell over on his motorcycle, and I'm taking him to the hospital."
I groaned, and it wasn't all fake out. I guess I looked pretty bad, too, being cut and bruised like I was. The fuzz changed his tone.
"Is he real bad? Do you need an escort?" "How would I know if he's bad or not? I ain't no doc. Yeah, we could use an escort."
And as the policeman got back into his car, I heard Dally hiss, "Sucker." With the siren ahead of us, we made record time getting to the hospital. All the way there, Dally kept talking and talking about something, but I was too dizzy to make out most of it.
"I was crazy, you know that, kid? Crazy for wanting Johnny to stay out of trouble, for not wanting him to get hard. If he'd been like me, he'd never have been in this mess. If he'd got smart like me, he'd never have run into that church. That's what you get for helping people. Editorials in the paper are in a lot of trouble. You better wise up, Pony. You get tough like me, and you don't get hurt. You look out for yourself, and nothing can touch you."
He said a lot more stuff, but I didn't get it all. I had a stupid feeling that Dally was out of his mind, the way he kept raving on and on, because Dallas never talked like that. But I think now I would have understood if I hadn't been sick at the time. The cop left us at the hospital as Dally pretended to help me out of the car. The minute the cop was gone, Dally let go of me so quick I almost fell.
"Hurry!"
We ran through the lobby and crowded past people into the elevator. Several people yelled at us, I think because we were pretty racked up looking, but Dally had nothing on his mind except Johnny, and I was too mixed up to know anything but that I had to follow Dally. When we finally got to Johnny's room, the doctor stopped us.
"I'm sorry, boys, but he's dying."
"We gotta see him,"
Dallas said, and flicked out 2-bit switchblade. His voice was shaking.
"We're gonna see him, and if you give me any static, you'll end up on your own operating table."
The doctor didn't bat an eye. "You can see him, but it's because you're his friends, not because of that knife." Dally looked at him for a second, then put the knife back in his pocket. We both went into Johnny's room, standing there for a second, getting our breath back in heavy gulps. It was awful quiet. It was scary quiet. I looked at Johnny. He was very still, and for a moment I thought in agony, "He's dead already. We're too late." Dally swallowed, wiping the sweat off his upper lip.
"Johnny Cake," he said in a hoarse voice.
"Johnny?"
Johnny stirred weakly, then opened his eyes. "Hey," he managed softly.
"We won," Dally panted. "We beat the Socs. We stomped them. Chased them out of our territory."
Johnny didn't even try to grin at him.
"Useless. Fighting's no good."
He was awful white. Dally licked his lips nervously.
"They're still writing editorials about you in the paper, for being a hero and all."
He was talking too fast and too calmly.
Yeah, they're calling you a hero now and heroizing all the greasers. We're all proud of you, buddy.
Johnny's eyes glowed. Dally was proud of him. That was all Johnny had ever wanted. Pony boy? I barely heard him. I came closer and leaned over to hear what he was going to say. Stay gold, pony boy. Stay gold. The pillow seemed to sink a little, and Johnny died. You read about people looking peacefully asleep when they're dead, but they don't. Johnny just looked dead, like a candle with the flame gone. I tried to say something, but I couldn't make a sound. Dally swallowed and reached over to push Johnny's hair back.
Never could keep that hair back. That's what you get for trying to help people, you little punk. That's what you get.
Whirling suddenly, he slammed back against the wall. His face contracted in agony and sweat streamed down his face.
Damn it, Johnny,
he begged, slamming one fist against the wall, hammering it to make it obey his will.
Oh, damn it, Johnny, don't die. Please don't die.
He suddenly bolted through the door and down the hall.
Chapter 10. I walked down the hall in a daze. Dally had taken the car, and I started the long walk home in a stupor. Johnny was dead. But he wasn't. That still body back in the hospital wasn't Johnny. Johnny was somewhere else, maybe asleep in the lot, or playing the pinball machine in the bowling alley, or sitting on the back steps of the church in Windricksville. I'd go home and walk by the lot, and Johnny would be sitting on the curb smoking a cigarette, and maybe we'd lie on our backs and watch the stars. He isn't dead, I said to myself. He isn't dead. And this time my dreaming worked. I convinced myself that he wasn't dead. I must have wandered around for hours, sometimes even out into the street getting honked at and cussed out. I might have stumbled around all night except for a man who asked me if I wanted a ride. Huh? Oh, yeah, I guess so, I said. I got in. The man, who was in his mid-20s, looked at me.
Are you all right, kid? You look like you've been in a fight.
I have been. A rumble. I'm okay. Johnny is not dead, I told myself, and I believed it.
I hate to tell you this, kiddo, the guy said dryly, but you're bleeding all over my car seats.
I blinked. I am?
Your head.
I reached up to scratch the side of my head where it had been itching for a while, and when I looked at my hand, it was smeared with blood.
Gosh, mister, I'm sorry, I said, dumbfounded. Don't worry about it. This wreck's been through worse. What's your address? I'm not about to dump a kid out on the streets this time of night.
I told him. He drove me to my house and I got out.
Thanks a lot. He waved me on. I'm just naturally a great guy.
He vroomed the motor and peeled out. What was left of our gang was in the living room. Steve was stretched out on the sofa, his shirt unbuttoned and his side bandaged. His eyes were closed, but when the door shut behind me, he opened them, and I suddenly wondered if my own eyes looked as feverish and bewildered as his. Soda had a wide cut on his lip and a bruise across his cheek. There was a band-aid over Derry's forehead, and he had a black eye. One side of Two-Bit's face was taped up. I found out later he had 4 stitches in his cheek and 7 in his head where he had busted his knuckles open over a socia's head. They were lounging around, reading the paper and smoking.
Where's the party? I thought dully. Weren't Soda and Steve planning a party after the rumble?
They all looked up when I walked in. Derry leaped to his feet.
Where have you been?
Oh, let's don't start that again, I thought.
He stopped suddenly. Pony boy, what's the matter?
I looked at all of them, a little frightened.
Johnny, he's dead. My voice sounded strange, even to me.
But he's not dead, a voice in my head said.
We told him about beating the socias, and, I don't know, he just died.
He told me to stay gold, I remembered.
What was he talking about? There was a stricken silence. I don't think any of us had realized how bad off Johnny really had been. Soda made a funny noise and looked like he was going to start crying. Two-Bit's eyes were closed and his teeth were clenched, and I suddenly remembered Dally. Dally pounding on the wall. "Dallas is gone," I said. "He ran out like the devil was after him. He's going to blow up. He couldn't take it." "How can I take it?" I wondered. "Dally is tougher than I am. Why can I take it when Dally can't?" And then I knew. Johnny was the only thing Dally loved. And now Johnny was gone. "So he finally broke." Two-Bit spoke everyone's feelings. "So even Dally has a breaking point." I started shaking. Dary said something in a low voice to Soda. "Pony boy," Soda said softly, like he was talking to an injured animal, "you look sick. Sit down." I backed up, just like a frightened animal, shaking my head. "I'm okay." I felt sick. I felt as if any minute I was going to fall flat on my face, but I shook my head. "I don't want to sit down." Dary took a step toward me, but I backed away. "Don't touch me," I said. My heart was pounding in slow thumps, throbbing at the side of my head, and I wondered if everyone else could hear it. "Maybe that's why they're all looking at me," I thought. "They can hear my heart beating." The phone rang, and after a moment's hesitation, Dary turned from me to it. He said, "Hello?" and then listened. He hung up quickly. It was Dally. He phoned from a booth. "He's just robbed a grocery store and the cops are after him. We gotta hide him. He'll be at the lot in a minute." We all left the house at a dead run, even Steve, and I wondered vaguely why no one was doing somersaults off the steps this time. Things were sliding in and out of focus, and it seemed funny to me that I couldn't run in a straight line. We reached the vacant lot just as Dally came in, running as hard as he could from the opposite direction. The wail of a siren grew louder, and then a police car pulled up across the street from the lot. Doors slammed as the policeman leaped out. Dally had reached the circle of light under the street lamp, and skidding to a halt, he turned and jerked a black object from his waistband. I remembered his voice.
"I've been carrying a heater. It ain't loaded, but it sure does help a bluff."
It was only yesterday that Dally had told Johnny and me that. But yesterday was years ago, a lifetime ago. Dally raised the gun, and I thought, "You blasted fool. They don't know you're only bluffing." And even as the policeman's gun spit fire into the night, I knew that was what Dally wanted. He was jerked half around by the impact of the bullets, then slowly crumpled with a look of grim triumph on his face. He was dead before he hit the ground. But I knew that was what he wanted, even as the lot echoed with the cracks of the shots, even as I begged silently, "Please, not him. Not him and Johnny both." I knew he would be dead, because Dally Winston wanted to be dead, and he always got what he wanted. Nobody would write editorials praising Dally. Two friends of mine had died that night, one a hero, the other a hoodlum. But I remembered Dally pulling Johnny through the window of the burning church. Dally giving us his gun, although it could mean jail for him. Dally risking his life for us, trying to keep Johnny out of trouble. And now he was a dead juvenile delinquent, and there wouldn't be any editorials in his favor. Dally didn't die a hero. He died violent and young and desperate, just like we all knew he'd die someday. Just like Tim Shepard, and Curly Shepard, and the Brumley boys, and the other guys we knew would die someday. But Johnny was right. He died gallant.